not as a permanent solution, and recognized now as being important because of the focus that is being placed on the finance reform, which we believe will be the most compelling issue before the 1989 Assembly.
It's interesting. The as I look at the way this process works, you know, the permanent revenue staff has had an immense impact. Permanent fiscal staff has had immense impact on the process. And there's another area I'm familiar with. It's kind of going by the by. As the Commission on the Judicial Branch was very, very successful over a 3-4 session period because it had permanent staff to give continuity and to carry the issues between sessions. That's the problem with interim committees. They don't have that permanent staff.
Well, but then that's very much like the UCC.
Yeah. Well, but it is and it isn't. But it's almost as if the difference between the ECC and the fiscal revenue commission, the judicial branch side, is that the fiscal revenue ECC people, the commission people, were all legislative side, program oriented, semi-advocacy institutions, in the sense that they became almost, and to compare with the British model, the permanent undersecretaries of the various ministers. I'm straining, but they were there with the institutional capability and the institutional memory to allow the policymakers to implement their programs. And in a way, that's what the revenue staff and the fiscal staff have done. It gives you a permanent institutional means to implement your policy. And that's what I would think would a LEO would eventually do.
Mr. Chairman, if I could be permitted,
but
the
ECC
runs parallel to the process. That's the problem. It doesn't directly involve itself in
the
process. It's
exactly
over here, and they're running side by side, going different directions, and as a consequence, very little ever happens as a result of it. And I think at this point, we are very interested in something happening.
Or revenue and fiscal are...
I think revenue is an excellent example.
Yeah,
I
very much in the process.
So John, why wasn't the effort made to improve that particular aspect of the ECC by giving them direct powers, then, if that's what you were really concerned about? It would have been cheaper to do it that way than it would be to establish all of this from the governor's office on down to an LEO.
Our representative, Van Vliet, recognized full well that the ECC is directed by a board, and that board, and we objected to this in the beginning, one of the criteria for being a member of that board was to have had as little to do with education as possible, preferably nothing. If you had been associated or were associated with any institution in any way or any governance board in any way, you were not qualified to serve on that board. Education is the largest public business in the state. It would not seem appropriate for us to place as a qualification for running any corporation a qualification that you've never been closely associated with a similar corporation. We didn't like the way it set up. Secondly, we did not believe there was any level of accountability with the ECC, which by statute was classified as a planning function. And if you don't have accountability, I think that your decision-making processes will run in different directions. We believe that the educational research that is done in this state should be done with the idea in mind of what you are trying to resolve and the problems you are trying to solve, not just to establish a study because the results might have been interesting. And I think we are establishing a direction. I think we have a momentum going for school finance. I think everyone was committed that when the safety net was passed, that this would be a tiny step one and that we would be moving forward from there. And I think this is one of the ingredients that may, in fact, that additional staff at that level, I think, is needed at this particular time. As I've said, I would hope that if this is adopted, that it is not the final time this is looked at, and that as we get into the next session, that we will take a hard look at what we need and what we don't need based on the kinds of things that we believe are going to be necessary in that educational
field. Let me ask you one question. We've got to get our senators back here. Between the two bills, 2034 and what we're referring to euphemistically is the amended 2768, and the people in the audience, if anybody's here looking for the student leadership program, I apologize. What's your preference between the two?
We have indicated to the Speaker that some time ago, obviously, we have supported the Legislative Education Office for some period of time, and we're very interested in it during the last assembly as well as this one. This issue was introduced in the House and was assigned to the Rules Committee. Hearings were held. No action was taken. We have subsequent to that time negotiated with the Speaker, and she's indicated she was willing to go this far with 2768, and we've said, well, that would be a good move in the right direction. So at this point in time, we would support House Bill 2768.
Answer my question.
Mr. Chairman.
One
other thing, John. Don't stretch the analogy too far on the ECC on a board that is basically detached. When you look at all of the legislative offices, whether it be fiscal revenue or an education office, you have 90 board members who are running in their own direction, and that's the legislators themselves who put the pressure upon the legislative offices. And I think that's one of the problems you have in legislative offices is that they also operate at the whims of the particular legislators and put pressure upon them.
Let me check around.
So I'm not sure you get a coordinated educational program anymore from a legislative office or another office just simply because we haven't corrected your deficiencies in one. Now, you're talking to a person who voted against ECC creation along with you.
Yeah. But I want to put Senator Hannah, where do you, just give me a hint of where you'd like to go on this, if anywhere.
Well, as I told the Speaker yesterday, I think I'll be open to look at it. I think that we need to look at both issues and try to resolve where the conflicts are, and if we can achieve it, then I think we should look at it.
Senator, Representative Van Vliet, where are you?
I will keep looking, Mr. Chairman, very diligently. I'm not enthusiastic about an LEO office. Yeah.
Well, it's my own preference, although it makes a little difference in this arena, is for a LEO office. But the message I'm getting is that 2768 in its amended form is probably the only thing that's palatable. So what I will do is I will discuss this with the Speaker. I'll discuss this with Senator Trow and some of the other groups. And if indeed we can reach a agreement, we will come back to probably 2768. But again, we've got to do a little dancing around. So anything further, I hope nobody else thinks that we're going to testify. But thank you. June 17, 1987 meeting of the Education Subcommittee of Joint Committee Ways and Means. Our agenda today includes Senate Bill 473, Senate Bill 474, and House Bill 220. Those are the Teachers Excellence in Education package.
House Bill what?
2020,
okay.
And then also we have on the agenda today House Bill 2768, which is the Office of Education Planning and something. Policy and Planning. What I'd like to do is bring up the advocates for the Education Excellence Project, and Mr. Whitney, Mr. Cox, and Mr. Kiesling. And just if I can very briefly outline the issues for us, Mr. Whitney, Mr. Cox, I don't think you've been down here before, not the ordinary legislative process. Most of what we do has already been done, so.
In other words, we're good listeners.
So it's my understanding that Senate Bill 473 is the Mentor Teacher Program, 474 is the Teacher Corps Program, and House Bill 2020 is the Professional Development Measure. It's also my understanding that it might be apt for us to amend all three of these bills, amend out the actual money of the bills, and put them into pure substantive law, and allow them to wait their actual appropriation in a later bill. Now, that's that's my understanding.
That's correct.
So, and I do believe there is support on this committee for all of these bills, so.
Well, I'll
just do you have anything to add?
Just vote for them. Chairman Mason, Phil, for the record, Phil Kiesling of the Office of House Speaker Bearcats. Actually, I remember the very first week of session, we came down and discussed generally the work of the advisory committee at the that had worked on all these issues. And of course, the question then on everyone's mind was, yes, they sound like great ideas, but how are they going to be funded? And I think that question, of course, is still there. But in the meantime, we now come before you with the three actual bills that have been worked on quite a lot by the substantive committees, all received the strong support of the substantive committees, Senate Education for the Mentor and the Teacher Corps, and the House Education Committee on School Improvement and Professional Development 2020. Before I introduce Rusty Whitney and Dee Cox to briefly describe just the main substantive elements of those bills, Dee will talk about the mentor bill and the school improvement bill first, and then Rusty will talk about, or the teacher corps, and Rusty will talk about the mentor bill. I'd like to real briefly review the process by which these bills came to you. Last interim, Speaker Katz and President Kitzhaber appointed a joint interim committee on education. They were the co-chairs. Senator Roberts was on the committee on the Senate side. But I think the guts of that committee and the main work was done by a group of approximately two dozen citizens, most of whom were current or former teachers, the remainder being citizens who'd served on various boards and commissions dealing with education. They spent most of 1986, probably a total of about a dozen meetings by the time we were done, looking at what was going on in other states, looking at what was happening in Oregon school districts, stressing that general issue of the profession of teaching, and trying to separate out what might not make sense in Oregon out of the many proposals around the country and what made a lot of sense to improve the profession of teaching. And by the time we got down to the bills out of the committee, we had the support of all the major groups, the Oregon Education Association, the School Boards Association, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And the bills before you, I think, reflect not only an extraordinary amount of work by the citizens on the advisory committee, people who know the profession, know schools inside and out, know how these bills, though certainly modest, will make a good deal of difference in encouraging things in our schools that will both improve the situation for our 25,000 teachers, but also have an impact on the entire education process for all our school children. I'd now like to turn it over to Dee and then Rusty to briefly run through the major highlights of these bills, and then leave it open for any questions that members of the committee might have.
I'm Dee Cox, superintendent of Westland Schools, and also served on the interim subcommittee. I am a bit hesitant to testify that when someone indicates that the votes are probably there already, I think it's time to leave. I have been known to talk myself out of deals. Would hate to do that. These bills really are a part of a package, sort of a down payment on school reform in Oregon. We looked at the issues in Oregon. We're kind of proud of Oregon schools. We think we've been doing a pretty good job, but we think we could do a better job and ought to do a better job. As we thought about that, it looked to us that the place to begin was in the profession itself. The important things that go on in schools, most of them happen in classrooms. Managed by teachers, and we're very proud of the teachers we have, but we wanted to provide some additional support and help. And so the School Improvement Professional Development House Bill 2020 is designed to do that, designed to do it in two ways. One is to get the local school districts and local school sites, the professional staff in those places, focusing upon student performance, how well the students are doing, and the act of teaching. and then to provide some money to encourage increased professional development in those two areas. It's designed so that school districts, through a grant application, can receive up to $1,000 per teacher for professional development designed to enhance teaching and learning of children. Now, the bill has many more elements than that, but that in essence is what it's about. I think you've all read the bill. It's a very good bill. It's patterned after some very successful programs in the state of professional development. We think that spread statewide will enhance the education of children all over the state by improving the quality of teaching in the classroom. The other bill, which is a teacher corps bill, is designed to attract some of the very best that we have in education. We've been a bit concerned in education that the quality of the pool of people going into education has been on a decline for about 10 years. I understand the last couple of years, the quality of the pool has picked up a bit. But the quality of the pool, as determined by SAT scores, by entering grades from high school, for performance in college, all of those measures, the quality of the pool we've been drawing our teachers from has been declining. The teacher corps is seen as part of an effort to restore that, to attract some of our very best to teaching. The other couple of problems it's addressing, one is the need for teachers in scarce areas, scarce in terms of not having enough teachers to fill the need, and currently it would be science and math perhaps, and also in more remote geographic areas of the state. The bill provides loan fees that students can receive up to $2,000 a year for undergraduate programs and $4,000 for graduate. And if the youngsters teach in certain parts of the state, those loans can be forgiven under certain circumstances. These are two beginning steps to reform. We think that the beginning of teacher reform is in these bills, and we think the beginning of educational reform is in improving the quality of the profession. And that's what these bills are directed toward, and continue to urge your strong support of them.
Whitney?
Sure.
I'm Rusty Whitney. I am chairman small software company in Portland called Oregon Software, and have spoken or written to most of you on this committee at some time this session. The background that I bring to this is that I've been a public school teacher in the Portland area for several years, and then for about 10 years was with OMSI, running educational programs, and the last 10 years have been in business. One of the few real easy to understand, really simple ideas that I have seen come up has been the mentor-teacher program. It's easy to understand the idea of having somebody in a role of passing on the flame, so to speak, a senior master teacher in a school. When we polled the different teachers in the state, we found out that most of them wanted that. We found that only about 10% of them get it. When we talk to citizens groups around the state, they think it's a good idea too. I think probably the best thing that I can do here is, if you have questions about it, as Dee said, I wouldn't want to unsell an idea that seems to be well accepted. I prefer to just answer your questions.
One question I have, Phil, maybe answer, is there any particular reason why this has to be in three bills, or could we put it all in one bill? Or that's,
I don't think there was any particular reason that three separate bills, they were divided up, to some go to the House, some go to the Senate, just in terms of workload. And
you got a broad relating clause on the House bill. You have any preference tactically or otherwise on starting in the Senate or starting in the House?
You mean at this point in the process, yeah, in Ways and Means? I can't think of any. I can't think of any. If the committee decided that was be most,
yeah, we could put them all into the House bill, and we're going
Again, that's a tactical question.
Yeah, they're three separate programs.
Three separate programs, but the House bills are relating to school improvement. Where the Senate bills say relating to support for beginning teachers, et cetera. So you could put the House bills in the Senate bill, but not, and I'm not going to go into why we can or can't do that, Mr. Cox. Don't worry about it. It's like the, you know, like pronouncing part of the Greek Orthodox Mass right. It's only a consequence to those people who did that. So does committee have any questions or comments on these measures?
I'm interested basically in a few of the concepts. One is that you are trying to get the very best people into teaching, and you've got the mentor program, which takes care of them in their first year, essentially, and you have a program to entice them in. There seems to be a gap in here that addresses the quality of educational coursework in the universities, which may be the whole problem.
Well, to speak to that, because the committee spent a lot of time looking at teacher education and felt that there were some serious problems and a need for some real improvement in the curriculum and the actual structure of some of those programs. There are efforts ongoing right now by the state system proposing to change the structure of teacher education, talking about a fifth-year program, letting the universities develop new programs. I think that the key thing in that effort, an effort that we support, but the key thing that will make the difference over the long run is what happens in the curriculum changes that occur in context of any structural change, i.e. going to a fifth year, going to a master's in arts of teaching. These bills do not speak directly to issues like curriculum at the schools of education or the structure, because the committee made a judgment that process was going to go on through the state system of higher education. They wanted to take a look at that and encourage them to go in that direction. I think that the education of teachers is something that is along a continuum. And I focus particularly on the mentor program, which tries, in a sense, to give a real high-octane boost to that first year of teaching, have a real induction similar to what you have in a medical school model, an internship supervised with a teacher who's been selected because of having demonstrated a certain mastery of teaching and recognized skills. That I think will benefit the education teachers a lot, and then secondly, the school improvement professional development, providing additional career opportunities, addresses the needs that teachers have told us time and time again of once they're in the classroom, having follow-up in terms of education, both in terms of studying in their field, doing more work on education
techniques. Bill, on that first year that you're in the classroom is almost a probationary period. You've had your block courses down in the sophomore and junior year, and some universities have a junior-senior combination block. The student gets to see at that time if they're really cut out for teaching, and hopefully through tight evaluation, they are told that, you know, either have it or don't have it. Now you come into the mentor program, and that is a crisis time for a first-time teacher in the classroom. All of a sudden, you're in the battlefield for real.
Sink or swim.
Now, is that a probationary period in which there's an evaluation at the end of that time, and a person's career could then be terminated? And if so, where does that fall with people like OEA, who basically the teacher is now in the program, and what kind of action is taken at the end of that year?
Good question. The effect of the mentor program, it would make no difference on existing law vis-a-vis the statutes on probationary teachers. In fact, having that mentor teacher there in the first year to ameliorate the problems of the sink or swim induction, here's the key, go to it, is going to, I think, help school districts and the OEA quite a bit, in that you will have fewer problems of having a teacher who by the end of the first year might be in that category if you're not sure whether it's going to work out or not. I mean, one of the intents of the program is that at the end of the first year, under this scenario, the teachers are a good deal more comfortable, a good deal more further along in their natural induction process in the profession. But legally, it would not change anything relating to the probationary status.
So they're off and running. They're basically off and running.
They're off and running as they are now. It's just that this is a way to start running stronger and
now, we'll
faster.
Assume that those first few years are your hot stuff. You're really in the groove. Those are your most productive time in teaching in reality. You're most creative, and you're probably doing your best classroom teaching. What are you going to do about the teacher that starts to burn out after a while? Are you going to have some mentors deal with the burnout problem that teachers experience?
I think this is where 2020 comes in. 2020 is targeted particularly to teachers already in the classroom, people who have been in 10, 15 years, approaching times in their professional life where the lack of opportunities now for career opportunities is something that is very striking to them. We've got testimony time and time again. We get the top of our salary scale. We've been there 10 or 15 years. We don't have opportunities to do things like go back to school, let's say for 6 months in your field, to serve as a mentor or to work with another teacher. And 2020 was very clearly intended to produce those kind of opportunities in the school. It's up to the school to decide, is this the best way to spend this money? But that's precisely the thing that it aims at, is creating new opportunities for those kinds of teachers.
And we're not training them to go and become administrators in particular.
No, in fact, just the opposite,
okay.
To keep them in the classroom.
All right.
I don't know if Dee or Rusty would like to add to any of that. But.
Well, I'll tell you, are there any other comments from the committee or from the Senator Cairns?
Well, I understand the intent of 473 and 474 tend to support them, but in my opinion, 2020 is just so much babble. I hate to be offensive, but I guess I have to be. I don't understand what this bill is, does, or what its purpose is, where it's going. It's kind of like Los Angeles. There's no there there.
That was Oakland.
Was it Oakland?
Yes,
whatever.
Gertrude Stein in Oakland.
No, okay, Oakland. Large city in California.
Keith Suburbs.
I see lots of lists of things that are going to be done and lots of things that are going to be quantified, but I don't understand what it's going to do. It's just to, you know, what do we get out of the back end of this bill?
Talk a little bit about my hopes and dreams for the bill, at least.
Jim, you can put anything you want in this bill, because, I mean, you can say this does anything, because I could do the same thing. I don't see this bill has a focus. I don't understand what it's doing.
Well, I think the focus of the bill is on the teachers that have been teaching in our schools for a period of time. Not focused on just the beginning teacher, although certain
right.
Beginning teachers would be eligible. What I'm reading into the bill, and it may be that it's difficult for others to see that, but what I see in the bill is an opportunity for every school district in the state of Oregon to develop a special program for the continuing professional development of their staff. So that, and the focus of that is required be upon student performance, how well students are learning, what it is that they're supposed to be taught, and also upon the act of teaching so that the teaching can improve. And those two things work together in the state and place putting money to encourage school districts to concentrate on those two elements of teaching, improvement through staff improvement, and through student performance.
I sure wish the bill said that. It says such these things, you know, we need the blue lights and the flag waving. Initiatives to promote educational excellence in the public schools, vital importance of increasing student learning and strengthening Oregon's economy.
Well, I
bet. And such things as state should encourage and assist local school districts and their efforts to establish school goals through a process that involves educators and members of the community. Blab, blab, blab.
There's.
Well, Senator Cairns, let me phrase the question this way. Representative Katz wants to go through the bill. But
all right.
But
let's
just
do it.
A moment. Before we do that, what the chair is going to propose, unless you don't agree, and we will work with you if need be.
Or work on me, as the case may be.
And as I mentioned in a side conversation here, the proposal
is to send these bills out in substantive form without appropriations, and the appropriation will come in a latter form. I'm getting a nod there. But what the chair would propose is that the two Senate bills be placed in the House bill strictly for convenience, and that be done with the acquiescence of legislative council, make sure we can do that. I'm just strictly housekeeping and just to move it along. So if we can get you to agree with that.
Yeah,
I'd probably make things
a lot. The bill.
Yeah.
Grattan doesn't understand it. People spent a year on it, and he already had the privilege of getting it explained.
Mr. Whitney.
I'd like to try to give a summary. Perhaps nobody explained, because we got into the gobbledygook too quickly, what some of the motivation was to do the bill. Maybe if you don't have any context, we should just give you about 1 minute of that. We listen to people in other states who have attempted to do something to make some fairly substantial improvements. And we talked to some districts. The Beaverton district was the one that we probably heard about the most, because I had once taught there. I knew some of the people involved. And they tried a plan that seemed to them to be a real departure.